I started by asking Nigel, why the DRI?
Well, we have two aspects to the centre, two major aspects. One is the training, teaching of psychotherapists, because I think there's a great need to bring the transpersonal into the professional field, give it some kind of credibility. And the other is, of course, is the clinical practice. So we have a large clinic with several hundred clients coming in every week. Again, with the principal practice is transpersonal. But we want to open up a third arm, or third aspect to CCP, and that is to do with research. Now, we could have just set up a research institute, like call it the Transpersonal Research Institute, but we want to use dreams as the main medium for promoting the transpersonal. Because dreams are something that everyone experiences, or most people are aware of, and also it awakens an enormous amount of interest in people. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to captivate an audience and to actually help them to relate personally to the transpersonal.
And where do you see the emphasis on research, and which projects would you like to see DRI concentrate on?
Well, I'd like to see DRI have a reasonably broad remit. The first point would be to promote research from research into dreams that work with a transpersonal perspective. Mm-hmm. That's the first point. But I think we also want to be able to offer further trainings in dreams, dream working, like lucid dreaming, working with particular client populations, alcohol is one, look at addictions. We want to show that dream work, from a transpersonal perspective, can be very effective. Of course, we don't know that yet. I mean, I personally have worked in dreams, and of course the people I trained working in dreams all swear by the effectiveness of dream work. But of course, it's never been put to test. We've never looked at that on a larger scale. So that's what we're trying to do. So that's one of the functions of DRI, is to really look at it using a proper research model and test it out.
So in an era of evidence-based medicine and needing to prove one's interventions, mm-hmm. how does the evaluation take place then to prove that the transpersonal take and dream analysis will help?
Sure. Well, I've made myself fairly familiar with some of the research work that's done on the effectiveness of dreams. For example, I remember one project recently being undertaken at the University of Maryland in America by a team of researchers, looking at the psychodynamic approach to dreaming. And of course, they've come to the conclusion that dream work doesn't necessarily promote healing in psychotherapy. It's no more effective than anything else. Mm-hmm. Although the people that actually made use of the dreams, the clients that told their dreams, did find it useful from their mm-hmm. point of view. But of course, in that particular piece of research, the clients were never encouraged to present dreams because the researchers didn't want to influence the clients or put any pressure on them. But as a result, only 5% of the time was used for dream work. So, because you can't really assess the effectiveness of dream work with such a small input of dream work. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is do the opposite, which in fact is to encourage people to bring their dreams, because we believe that the dream actually acts as a mirror to the person's inner world. And once you have that, that's exactly what a therapist needs, to be able to see into the client. Mm-hmm. And so the dream for us is a wonderful tool for that. You know, mm-hmm. teaser.
Okay, looking at the DRI archive, you talked a lot about the waking dream technique. Mm. Is that pivotal to the transpersonal approach? for dream analysis?
No, it's not pivotal for transpersonal approach. You don't have to use the waking dream technique. Because the transpersonal approach to dream work consists of two very simple ideas. One is that the dream certainly will show you your way of thinking, your psychology, your psychological beliefs, your habits, your attitudes, etc., things that you're worried about. But underneath that, there's always the spiritual, the presence of the spirit behind the dream. Now, when we say that, what we mean is, within some of the images of the dream, if you explore those images deeply enough, you suddenly access something beyond the mind.
Mm.
So that's the transpersonal approach. Now, you don't have to have a dream to do that. You can do that with creative imagination.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it working with a person's an experience of a trauma or something like that. You could still do the same thing. But the dream work is something very specific. It gives you an opportunity that the person to get right into the dream subjectively and to work with them. And so the waking dream technique, I think, brings a sharp focus on the transpersonal.
There's a universality and there's archetypal images that present that are cross-cultural.
Yes.
And what about the dangers of perhaps an inflated ego therapist might start imposing meaning? Is that a risk, do you see?
Yes, it's always a risk. Yeah. I think that a lot of people's criticism of symbolism in dreams is based on that idea that you're fixing a dream before the person's really had a chance to explain the dream. In other words, it's no longer their dream. And so what I try to teach is that the symbols that come up are, of course, unique to that dreamer. You might be able to, through your knowledge of symbols, know something about those symbols. But the way the dreamers experience them is unique.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want to explore. And the way you explore it is you begin with saying to the dreamer, what is your association with that symbol? What comes up for you? Now, there is an aspect to the waking dream approach that we haven't touched on, which is working with the body. Now, when you are focusing on a symbol, if you can track the feeling of the symbol through the body, that tends to give you that individual's actual experience of the symbol.
That can be done with the pebble.
That's right. Mm. Well, that's one way, but I mean, literally, when you work with an image in a dream, you can still track the dream through the body, and you can focus on the symbol and say, well, where are you? And the person will say, well, I'm, you know, in my heart, or I'm in my throat, or my head. And as they focus on that part of the body, that's when the particular feelings and sensations that are pertinent to that symbol and that individual come out.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you completely overcome the danger of imposing a generalized interpretation onto the client's symbol.
You mentioned earlier lucid dreaming. Some lucid dreamers see, particularly for the treatment of trauma,
mm-hmm.
could you possibly see lucid dreaming as a emerge as a modality of its own in the treatment of counselling and psychotherapy?
Yes, it can. I think that provided, you know, it requires a certain amount of training for a person who... The person has to have a facility for lucid dreaming. First of all, you've got to have people remember their dreams. Secondly, it's a certain sensitivity or awareness that enables you to become lucid in dreaming. If you can do that, then of course you can overcome trauma. For example, I worked with a client who had quite a while of dreams, and one of the things he was not traumatized by, but certainly afraid of, was his anger.
Mm-hmm.
He had an enormous amount of stored up anger in him, and he never really wanted to go near it. And he had this particular dream in which a dog appeared. And the dog came up to bite his hand. And as the dog just grabbing his hand, he suddenly remembered, I'm dreaming. And then he remembered his therapist and myself as saying, that you can change the dream if you're aware that you're dreaming. And just the mere thought of that enabled him to actually experience the dog and the threat of the dog differently. And the dog instantly changed and began to lick his hand rather than bite his hand. And so there was a good example of him overcoming that fear of anger, because the dog actually was an angry dog, symbolizing an angry part of himself.
And can that work as mastery?
That's a kind of mastery.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you can do the same thing with a waking dream technique, which I think is easier than with lucid dreaming, because we can work with everyone with the waking dream technique. But it's essentially the same as a lucid dream, because you do go into the dream state. It's an altered state of consciousness when you're working with the dream, particularly when you're tracking it through the body. And at that point, the person can actually, has the, given the opportunity to change things, can change things.
You're listening to an interview with Nigel Hamilton with me, Noel Bell, and we're chatting about the Dream Research Institute in London.
We spoke earlier about meditation and the role of meditation in getting in touch as almost a channel, but you were implying that meditation can zone you out and it can become an escape. And often when we look around the pop psychology of today's world, and it's become very trendy, but do you think there's dangers in seeking mindfulness for the wrong reasons?
Well, meditation today is promoted as a stress reliever, with popular appeal. Of course, meditation can be useful if you literally stop the mind from like a machine from running on its crazy path. You can actually give the mind a rest and you experience freedom of stress. And of course, the traditional techniques of meditation teach you to disidentify with your body, disidentify with the mind. So that's the way you kind of go into an empty space, a blank space. Now that, of course, can provide a tremendous relief, which in of itself could become addictive. It become a real escape. But of course, if you pursue it as part of a spiritual path, it can lead you, that emptiness leads you to discover something much deeper in yourself. But that's a much further stage of the meditation path. What I'm talking about is using meditation in therapy, whether it's with a dream or whether it's with a painful issue that's coming up, is when the feelings emerge, rather than using meditation to escape the feelings, we actually use meditation to enter fully into the feelings. In other words, it's like a focusing technique that Gendlin talks about, that you close your eyes and you focus on the sensations and the feelings and even the thoughts, any images that are generated around this issue. It's like there's, in that trauma or in that feeling, there's a deep-held impression. And that impression is giving off vibrations, and you're experiencing them through the body, through the mind, the heart. And this is the strange thing. When you bring full awareness to it, it's like lucid dreaming, in the sense that something begins to change. The pattern of that impression begins to change.
Even if the feelings are one of suicide or...
Even if they're ones of suicide. Yeah. If you stay with it 100% long enough, let me say long enough, it can be for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. In the vast majority of cases, the person will actually start to contain those feelings. They'll start to actually realize that they're bigger than those feelings. Those feelings are not overwhelming them. On the other hand, there can be cases when, this would be more rare, where the person actually, when you get them to focus on those feelings, can't cope with them. In other words, they are getting overwhelmed, they don't have the capacity. So, of course, you must not have them focus on them in that way.
And would that be a danger of re-traumatizing?
Because you would re-traumatize them.
Yeah. Okay. And if we just wrap it up by talking about the particular benefits of the transpersonal approach, because we share, do we not, a lot in common in the sense of holding. We talked about containment, we can think of Winnicott, we can think of Bion maybe. We can also think of sharing a lot of ground with the existential school. and with the authenticity of the person-centered approach. So I guess essentially for people who are not aware of the transpersonal, where would you see discrete aspects of transpersonal that are unique?
I think transpersonal addresses the question of loss extremely well, and the question of loss of meaning. The loss of personal self, personal respect, loss of meaning in life. These are extremely important issues that can't be addressed through cognitive means. Adopting a positive attitude, not allowing negative thoughts to come in, because it comes from a deeper level in us, what the transperson calls the soul. So what we use the phrase, it's a loss of soul that the person's experiencing. Like the modern issue today, the existential crisis, is about a loss of soul. It's a loss of meaning, that our lives have become so disconnected from nature and from each other that what we're caught up with is technology, and the drive for success and money and power, and it seems to have taken us away from ourselves. So that in that sense there's a loss of self and a loss of meaning. So of course the transpersonal has a lot in common with the Rogerian approach, with the existential approach, and so on. It's saying much the same thing, but it's saying that what we're doing is we're ignoring the most important, most fundamental parts of our nature, which is the soul, which of course our modern materialistic society ignores. As far as they're concerned, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the more you emphasize that, the greater the split you create in this human psyche. To the extent that people become irrational, they break down, or they become sick. And so our work is to help people to restore the connection with the soul, restore that connection with the deeper self. So once again, through dreams, this becomes a way of connecting to yourself. The more you pay attention to dreams, you have a dialogue, you have a relationship with it, and eventually, your dreams become less chaotic, less depressing, and much more inspiring.
And just on that, if someone from an atheist tradition is seeing a transpersonal therapist, so the atheist won't believe in the idea of soul.
That's right.
How does the approach work there?
It doesn't. There's no difference, because you're not teaching the person about spirituality. You're helping the person to explore their own nature. So the atheist won't have dreams of angels, of course, because they don't believe in angels. But they will have dreams that encourage them to explore deeper in themselves, and that's all you need to do, is to help them to go deeper, and they will find their own meaning in the experience. They will begin to actually discover what's really important to them, and what their deeper feelings are telling them.
It's been fascinating chatting. Anyone listening, or indeed watching, who might be studying already, but maybe not in the transpersonal tradition, what would you advise about how to get involved in dream analysis from a transpersonal perspective?
Well, the first thing is to make sure that you find somebody who is experienced in working with the transpersonal approach to dreams. Somebody who is a qualified transpersonal therapist who's had several years' experience. Secondly, that you feel comfortable with that. I find we've had cases of people who've worked with experts but have come away feeling having had their dream destroyed, simply because there wasn't a chemistry between the therapist and the client. So that's even more important is the chemistry between the two. And the experience and knowledge of the therapist, of course, is important as well.
The DRI will hope to have an intervention in terms of dealing with long-term well-being across the population.
Well, at the moment we're beginning a small-scale pilot project, working with a small number of clients and therapists, looking at the effectiveness of the waking dream techniques. That's our first step. Our next step then is to get involved with the NHS. We already have a link being made with the NHS regarding the effectiveness of transpersonal work, working with some of the NHS clients. But what we're hoping to do is to be able to actually use the dream work in the therapeutic research in the NHS with particular target populations to actually show that it is effective. Because we don't know yet, we have to still find that out. But if it is effective, then it has enormous implications for the transpersonal, because it means that the funding for the NHS will begin to switch towards therapy, transpersonal therapy. Now, of course, that's quite controversial, because at the moment most of the funding that goes to therapy is towards CBT. And CBT, which has its uses and it is effective in its own way, has not been particularly effective, as far as we know, in working with some of the problems, and particularly alcohol and addictions. So this is a new ground for us to explore. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But the long-term implications could be very, very positive for the transperson if it can be shown to be effective.
You've been listening to an interview with Nigel Hamilton with me, Noel Bell, about the Dream Research Institute in London. You can find more information on the DRI by visiting driccpe.org.uk, and for more information on the training courses provided by the CCPE, visit their website at ccpe.org.uk.